you know what, whether we like it or not, even if even the, those children that are on their best behavior on a day-to-day basis, they do make mistakes, they slip sometimes, and they get afraid, you know, now what? I've had a good, I was doing well so, you know, for so long, and then I slipped. But that's part of life. And they need to understand that and learn that, that it's part of life. Even the best of the best will make mistakes. They'll slip, they'll fall, but they'll pick up and move on.
Right. And the key is picking up and moving on. And that's what they need to learn. They need to learn, because everybody, we all make mistakes.
The good life is one inspired by love and guided by knowledge. You'll find both love and knowledge here on The Misdiagnosed Life. Here is your host, Beverly Butler.
You know, I used to think that all of these labels, ADD, ADHD, ODD, and all of these ABC-type labels on children were just a bunch of baloney. And behavior problems were just a parenting problem. Till I had a child. As a matter of fact, before our daughter was born, I remember saying, just let my child have a temper tantrum. Oh, that was a big mistake. Because I know God heard me, and He looked down, and He said, okay, Missy, since you think you're so smart and you know it all, let's just see how well you handle temper tantrums. Well, to say I've had a learning experience is an understatement. Because not only did I have the queen of the temper tantrum throwers, she's a high-maintenance queen. Now, God knows I love her. I love her to death. But she has definitely been a challenge. And it's definitely been a learning experience for me. Well, I have an expert in this field of behavior problems with me today. Her name is Dr. Stem, and she's a licensed psychotherapist, a motivational speaker, and author. She's a teen parent expert. And I can hear the parents now jumping up and down, high-fiving. Yes, this is going to be an interesting show for you to listen to today. Well, like I said, she's a teen parent expert who helps teens and parents work through their problems and live a passionate, on-purpose life. Well, Dr. Stem is also one of the newest members here at America Out Loud, and we're so happy to have her on board. Dr. Stem, welcome to the platform, and tell us a little bit about your show before we get into our topic today.
Thank you, Bev, and thank you for having me as your guest today. My show is called The Dr. Stem Show, and guess what? It is actually a show that bridges the gap between adults and adolescents, which are our teenagers. So it's a motivational, inspirational, educational, and empowerment show. What I do on that show is I do have people from all different aspects of life who come there, who have overcome, who have achieved something in life, in order for me to encourage our young ones that are growing up. And what I will be doing next year, beginning in January, I will also be doing a one-woman show where I will be talking about the different things that parents face when they were, you know, raising these teenagers. And I'm also doing some success tips for the teenagers and young adolescents out there. So it's an exciting show, one that they want to listen to.
Yes, definitely. And it's very, very exciting. I'm really thrilled. We're really thrilled. All of us are thrilled to have you on the platform. And I think that topic is a very needed topic this day and time, especially this day and time.
Yes.
Yeah. So, well, I just wanted to ask you, why, just right out the gate, why do you think that we're seeing so many behavior problems in children and teenagers today?
Well, there are some reasons that, you know, a lot of people will come up with, which, you know, even us for psychotherapists, we come up with as well, that, you know, there's so many of the children that are being raised in single parent homes. The divorce rate is very high. That means the parents are parenting in two parent homes instead of one parent home, mom and dad under one roof. They're in different homes. And then there's also probably what I can say, high level of diagnosis. A lot of children are being diagnosed with something because, you know, I mean, with behavioral problems, not that, you know, they don't have the diagnosis, but I think there's a high rate of diagnosis of people, you know, children being labeled and given diagnosis that is being seen and very prevalent as well. What is the other thing? The other thing that I know for sure, which I think you believed before, is that a lot of parents do believe that, you know what, I think all adolescents or teenagers are bad, or they have behavioral problems. And then we have parents that actually will put that on a child and say, oh my God, my child is about to be a teenager. I can only imagine the way that they're going to behave. And already they have, you know, made that a prayer, and God answers prayers all the time.
Right.
He answers every prayer.
Yeah. And so it's really preconceived ideas in some cases that, oh brother, here come the trouble years. Well, I wanted to ask, is it worse today than in previous generations? Because it sure seems like it. And I don't know if, well, I do know from some of my studies and research and from having one myself, we have children that are more sensitive, and I've talked about this a lot, and I'll continue to talk about it. They call them indigo children. They have their other labels that they call them, but they're more sensitive. They're just a different breed of children than when I grew up. And, I don't know. I think the parenting is not as strong as it was back when I grew up. Now, whether they all did it right back then, no, I don't think they did, but I think they did a pretty good job. But you know, I think it's probably is a combination of things, but it just seems like it's worse today, or are we just turning into a wimpy society? And, you know, some of these children, I think, are just acting normal, and we want to label them with something because the parents are so tired. What do you think? Are you seeing, or do you think it's worse today than it used to be in, say, our generation?
You know what? I think what's different is the culture and the environment.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Which impacts, you know, the way that these children will be behaving. The environment that they're growing up in is different, because then most of the time when we talk about our days, we are talking about mom and dad being under the same roof. And
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, the values that were instilled in us, and, you know, it was a generation of, you know, because I say it so, and you are going to,
right.
to listen.
Yeah,
or else. So now we have a generation that is saying, because you say it so what? I mean, what has that got to do with anything? You have to explain to me why you say it so. I know you say it so, but why?
Yeah.
And that's the difference, because now the parents have to explain the why. We didn't ask why.
No.
They are asking why.
Yeah. Now, are they just broken? More bold than we were, or is it they feel like they can ask? I mean, and you may feel the same as I do, I don't know, but if I had asked my parents that, I mean, I don't think that ever crossed my mind. You know, I would be, it was like a dictatorship back then. You just didn't argue with them. If you did, you suffer the consequences. And now it seems like the families was like a democracy or something, you know.
There's a weird way they used to say you'd be dead if you ask me why. I mean, they just look at you and
you know. You were afraid you might be. You just didn't want to take that chance, you know?
So I think, you know, going back to that question, the real difficulty is the communication and connection. I mean, that's the number one thing that a lot of parents are struggling with.
Yeah.
Whereas with our generation, you know, the communication was, you know, most of the time one way. It came from the parents, and what they say goes.
Right.
And there was no other way except to say, you know, that's what mom says and that's what dad says. So that's how it goes. So today it becomes a challenge to connect with them, because then the communication is different. Not only are you not able to talk to them, but, you know, you also have to be well versed with technology so that you can text message them, WhatsApp them. I have a lot of parents that have come into my office. As you know, I'm a licensed psychotherapist and I have a private practice right here in the Orlando, Florida area. So what happens is when the parents come in, they go, you know, I'm about to kill them. Because all I get are text messages. I mean, you know, I'm calling her or him, and all I get is a text message back in answer to, you know, oh, yes, mom, you know, what's up? It's not, you know, mom, yes, you know, what is it? Wait, it's what's up? Yes, mom, what's up? And the mother is like, oh, my God, I'm about to pull my hair because what's up? I'm your mom. You're calling me what's up? And the thing about it is, if you go beyond that what's up, and understand that, one, they have answered you, and two, this is a whole different way of communication. And if you don't, I've had, because I work with teenagers as well, and the text messages come in now, you know, from those parents that are text messaging, and they're asking, what time are you coming, you know, back from school, and what time are you going to work? And they're looking at the text message and then shut their phone. I said, wait a minute, you were just asked a question. Well, I mean, she asked that question 20 times today already, so I've already answered it. I'm not doing it. You know?
Yeah.
I can only imagine the parent is fuming. I said, honey, even if they ask 20 times, it's either you answer the phone or you text message them back. You gotta talk to her because otherwise, you know what? The minute she picks you up, you know what's gonna happen. She's like, well, I'm gonna put my headphones on. Oh my goodness.
Oh me. Yeah. Uh-oh. parents don't have the respect now that they did when we grew up.
No, they don't.
I think that's one of the biggest problems. And that's the parents' fault. I mean, that's our fault. You know?
And that's why I was also emphasizing the environment, because then these children are not like us. We could see mom going out wearing this short skirt, holding her beer, getting this, you know, her and dad going out, and we wouldn't say a word. Mm-hmm. Now, these children, you cannot tell them to do one thing and then you're doing another, because they'll call you out on it.
Right, right. And maybe rightly so, maybe in a sense. Yes. But at the same time, we would have never done that to our parents. Now, yes, there's positives and negatives to both styles of parents that I'm seeing, but it seems like in ways they didn't have the problems that that parents have today with their children, or maybe it was just a different set of problems. But one thing I'm seeing too is today the parents too much want to be their children's friend. That never crossed my parents' mind, I don't think. You know, and I'm not saying it's necessarily wrong, but first you got to be a parent, you know, and that kind of thing.
Yeah, the one thing, Bev, that, you know, I mean, we also have to look at, most of the parents are also younger.
That's true, yeah.
That are there. So they have a teenager, but they had them when they were young themselves and they were teenagers. So they didn't have any direction or role model that they could have said, you know what, I know how to parent, or at least I have, you know, a parent that I can relate to, because most of the parents didn't have that direction, you know, on, you know, seeing their parents parenting them is one thing. And then a lot of them, even if they are married, we still have more women being the, you know, prominent or, you know, primary parent in the home. So they are just as good as being a single parent. Not only that, but they're parenting, they're also responsible for going to work, you know, getting employed and paying half or three quarters of the bill, or some parents are paying all the bills by themselves. So all those, you know, factors come into play on why these parents are not able to completely and fully be present for these girls.
No, that's fair. I mean, that's a fair assessment, I think. Very fair. Yeah. And it is just a different environment. But it just, it's really kind of sad to me that it's that way, because there are a lot of children with a lot of problems. I also wanted to ask, are you familiar with indigo children, with that term? They're very sensitive, and it's just like you gave a perfect example of one, of where of course, parents shouldn't do this anyway, but you can't do one thing and tell them something else, because they're very honest. They're very, you know, straightforward, and you just can't get anything over on these children. And they're just different. They're just different than my generation when we grew up. Are you familiar with indigo children?
To be honest with you, I have not worked with, you know, children that have been diagnosed with indigo, but I know of the term indigo children. They're also known as crystal children,
exactly,
or
right,
star children, they call them, right, and, you know, a lot of wisdom and level, you know, with the indigo children. They're very intuitive as well. So
Exactly.
Yeah. And a lot of them have a diagnosis, you know, ADD, which is attention deficit disorders, and attention deficit hyperactive disorders, which I have had, you know, separately, ADD and ADHD children, but not specifically the ones that would have, you know, had an indigo diagnosis as well.
Right. Now, I also wonder, how is the best way you have to handle these, what I call indigo children, these different children. How do you handle them different than a lot of the other children, like when I grew up and all? And how is the best way nowadays? They say most children, and I don't know that anybody really knows the true percentages, but are these real sensitive children, how is the best way to discipline or to give these children boundaries?
To be honest with you, discipline is a result of not following boundaries or rules of the home,
right,
or in a place. So I think it all begins with setting the boundaries and the rules and being clear about what the boundaries are, as well as what the consequences are. And when you do this from a place, of caring and love, mm-hmm. and teaching them that this is what's acceptable, and this is, most of the time I encourage the parents to sit down with their children and say, okay, honey, we're going to go through what's acceptable and not what's not acceptable. You tell me whether this will work. And it's almost like, negotiating, but you have the upper hand.
Right.
And they will think that, well, you know what? I was there and I sat down with mom and we agreed that at 8 o'clock, all phones will be shut down and we'll put them on the counter and I will put mine in the counter as well, mm-hmm. or they will be locked out. So when they sneak out at night and take that phone and start playing, on the phone, and there was a consequence for it that was also agreed upon, that this is a consequence that will be there. And the parents follow up with those consequences,
right.
which is the discipline. It's usually something that is manageable. Children will be always children, and they do grow up. Every year that you celebrate a birthday, that means this kid is growing up and they're no longer the baby that you had. So the consequences, the disciplining, the rules, the regulations, they have to change in a way where they understand that I'm not going to be treating you like you're a child anymore. Neither am I expecting the same behaviors that you had when you were young. So now let's, work on to new consequences that will be implemented and implement them.
Right. And that's the key, is the follow through. You have to do what you say, or it's not going to work. The whole thing's not going to work if you don't follow through and be consistent. And that's one of the hardest things to be and to do as a parent, is to be consistent with a follow through. But you have to for it to work.
Yes. So clear structure, clear guidelines and clear consequences. That's what, that's how good discipline will always work with children and mostly with teenagers.
Yeah. And it's hard for them to argue with it when they sat down and negotiated it with you.
But teenagers will always argue with you, whether they sit down at the table or not. Let's be clear, parents. They will argue with you.
Yeah. And most of the time, logically should be hard to, but they don't use logic, though.
Most of the time, they're expecting you to have forgotten and say, well, you're old. You forgot what you told me.
Yeah.
And then if you feed into it, they got you, because they are trying to fight to get to that sensitive part of you. And when I work with them, I look at them and they go, you remember you told me? And I'm looking at them, what are you looking at, Dr. Malatini? I told you that. I said, because you think I'm a fool.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. That's why I'm looking at you. I'm not a fool. I remember exactly what I said. We even wrote it down and you signed for it. What do you mean? Well, you did. And I pull out my paper and I put that paper there and then I look on the side and I'm done. And
right.
they go, well, but okay, fine. Okay, I wrote it down. So can we? No. If you had come in and wanted to negotiate what we wrote down, or the consequence that you're getting, then I could understand. But for you to come in and want to make me a fool and say, well, this is not what you did, then you argue with me. No, it stands. What we wrote stands. And it's a modeling for parents,
right.
to say, and I said, I'm not yelling. I'm not screaming.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not. Most of the time they'll be like, are you mad? I said, I am. I am mad, but I'm not going to scream at you.
And this is with the people you counsel.
This is the people that I counsel.
And you do that in front of the parents so that you're modeling it for them.
I do that in front of the parents so that I can model for them. And they can see, and the students even know, I do it in the high school. I have offices in the high school as well as in my office. And they know that, okay, she doesn't play, and there's a certain place where, we don't cross that line. I said, because then we talk about it. And, if you're fighting in the school and you're one of mine that I counsel, all I do is walk in the hallway and I see you showing your butt out. And then I just stand there and they go, and if I stand there, I'm expecting you to understand and respect the fact that, they have now called me, or I've heard that you're fighting. So you and me need to go to my office and talk. So most of the time the students will look and they don't want to stop. And then all I do is walk right back into my office before I know it. I'm telling you, I've been working, doing this business for over 15 years now. And before I know it, they are walking right behind me. That fight has stopped and they're walking right behind me and they say, I saw you. I said, I know you did, but you kept fighting and you kept cursing and you're screaming. So what does that mean? Well, because you don't understand what happened. And And then we you know, they come in the office and we talk. So the next time I know that, you know what, they took longer this time. So I point out all the things that went wrong when I walked out in the hallway. And then the next time they do that, it's, you know, it's a shorter time. They don't have to stand. So I tell the parents to be patient. It doesn't mean that they won't make mistakes. It doesn't mean that they won't fight. It doesn't mean that they won't talk back to you. But, you know, incremental changes.
Right. Right.
Nice and slowly. Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very good. Very good mentoring you're doing. And it's also, you expect compliance.
I sure do.
And they know. There's no need in arguing because you just expect it.
Yeah.
And so they catch on to that pretty quickly, don't they?
Yeah.
Okay. So what can parents do? Now, there's a lot of children, a lot of teens, a lot of young people that's been labeled ADD, ADHD. And whether you think that's real or not, that's not really the issue with this question. It's there, and so they start believing that themselves. But how do you help parents and the teens to help keep their diagnosis from becoming their identity? In other words, you know, so they can say that I'm not ADD. That's just maybe something, a characteristic of mine or something, but I'm not my disorder. How do you work with them on that?
The best way I can answer you, you know, to that question, Bev, is this is a mentor of mine, Les Brown. I'm sure you know him. He's a motivational speaker.
Yes, I'm familiar with him.
Yes, he has a famous quote that he said, "Don't let someone else's opinion become your reality." And this is what happened to him when he was in school, in high school himself, that, you know, he had a label. And he kept, you know, he said to one teacher when he walked into class that, you know, he was ADD, and that the teacher spoke back to him and said, don't let someone else's opinion become your reality. So I say to all the children, the teenagers and children out there, don't let your diagnosis define you. You are not your diagnosis.
Right. And that is very valuable advice right there.
Yes. Do not let your diagnosis define you. You are not your diagnosis. And it goes both to adults and young people. So many schools, you know, do not teach, as you might know, specific life skills, confidence building, say, you know, self-esteem, goal setting. They don't have classes that are specifically for that. And what my programs, you know, what I do in my programs, you know, which is bridging the gap between parents and teenagers, for most of my programs, they are social skills and life skills programs. And once what happens is when a teenager is confident about themselves and they believe in themselves and they learn how to, you know, set goals, what, you know, they become more than their diagnosis. They think beyond their diagnosis because now what they can see is what's possible for them, what they can do, diagnosis or no diagnosis, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
You're giving them a mountain to climb.
Disability or not disability. Yes, right. They do have a mountain to go. You are somebody.
Right.
Yes.
Right. And there's nothing better to build self-esteem in a child or anybody.
Yes.
Than to get that mountain, you know, than to climb that mountain and get up to the top. And that really helps. That helps in so many different ways. And it helps get your mind off of your problems or off of your diagnosis and on to your goals and to things that you want to accomplish and things that can excite you. And then that's when life really gets fun to me.
And that's the key, excitement, because a lot of teenagers, by the time, you know, teenagers, adolescents, as you know, and by that time, they're bored easily.
Mm-hmm.
So to continuously stimulate their minds is key.
Right.
So that they can get excited, yeah.
Yeah, and you can do so much more with a person when they're excited about a goal.
You're listening to the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. It's where we say, let the silent voices be heard. We invite you back to AmericaOutLoud.com to get all the latest. Make it a daily stop and also get the app. You go right to the App Store and download our free app, and that will put all our content right into your hands on your phones and your tablets. It doesn't get any easier than that.
Well, I'm going to talk a little bit about ODD, and we throw a lot of these labels around, but it's oppositional defiance disorder. That one has been really curious. I've been really curious about that one for a long time. How do you help families work through this oppositional defiance disorder type thing, or is there something else going on with that?
To be honest, when I was in Massachusetts, I had a program that I used to refer for, additional services in addition to the counseling that I provided. They provided what we call sensory motor training. Mm-hmm. And stimulation, and it's a different form of treatment that they also received in addition to counseling. And some of the children that have ODD are actually on medications. They get prescribed medications. But the best way to get help is for the parents to not just throw this label and say you're ODD, to make sure that it's diagnosed by professionals. And once it's diagnosed by professionals, we have a tendency of making sure that we surround these children that have, the diagnosis with professionals that will deal with different parts of the brain, of the behavior that, that will help the children once diagnosed. So not only will you have the, physicians monitoring the medications, you have us, the therapists, doing behavior modification, as well as social skill building. And then we have other experts and expertise, depending on what the need is, that we can refer the children to as well.
Well, what do they think causes ODD, oppositional defiant disorder?
The exact cause of oppositional defiant disorder is not known. But it's believed that it's a combination of biological, genetic, and environment factors that probably contribute to the diagnosis of ODT. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the signs and symptoms, as you know, these children, once they have severe temper tantrums, they have excessive argument. You can't even talk to them about anything before they start lashing back at you. They don't want to, follow direction. Most of the time, it's mm-hmm. oppositional, which means they don't follow direction.
So
they
do what they want. It's off the charts.
It's really off the charts. Opposition. And that's when you know that, this is not something that my child is just doing. This is something that I probably need to go and seek, help.
Right.
But most parents, of course, when you see that, it's almost like you want that child to listen to you and you want that child to behave. And at some point, you get so stressed out that you start getting sick yourself because they're not listening and it's not changing. So before you get to that point, there's a certain time where you say, it's been maybe 2-3 months that I've been seeing these changes in my son or my daughter, that they're not listening anymore. And I'm getting more calls from the school and, I can't even get to sit down with them and talk to them. So that's when you ask to say, honey, let's go to the doctors and see, maybe there's something else that's going on with you, because I know this is not you.
Right.
To try and help them. Yes.
It's way more than just a stubborn child.
It's
off the charts, so to speak.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
And you said something about they had a sensory problem. Is this the same as sensory processing disorder, where either their skin is really, really sensitive or they need stimulation on their skin, or were you talking about another sensory problem?
It's another sensory problem. I'm not quite familiar with the sensory skin.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, with that one, I'm not quite familiar with that.
Okay. Well, sensory processing disorder, quite a few children, especially sensitive children, the very intuitive children, a lot of times have what's called sensory processing disorder. And that you can have one of both ways. It seems like the more sensitive skin is the more common form of it, where clothes bother them, tags bother them. Now, tags can bother anybody, don't get me wrong, but they're hypersensitive to it.
Yes.
And they just like real loose clothes, and they're just very, very sensitive. The skin's very sensitive. Their eyes are sensitive, hearing sensitive, everything's sensitive. And then the opposite of that is still in the same category, but some children have to have, they can't feel enough. It's like they need their skin stimulated. In other words, some children will just run into walls on purpose just so they can feel it against their skin, or they want heavy blankets, where the sensory children with the very sensitive skin, they may not want any cover on, but the ones with the opposite problem in the sensory category may want a heavy blanket on. It's something they need, that and that is a problem. And I was just wondering if that was what you were talking about with the ODD, because I thought that would be really interesting. Because I know some ADD and ADHD children have that also. And I was talking to a doctor who we were talking about this, she treats some children with this, and I totally agree with her, and it's kind of what I think, too. I think a lot of that problem is, are just toxins that's built up around the nerves and all.
Wow.
Of course, I'm sure there's different you know, causes of it. Well, yeah. I wanted to ask, what's the number one problem that parents have with teenagers today, would you say?
I think one of the things that I'm not going to do is to generalize the problems and say,
okay.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah, because each family and parent's challenge is different, as you know.
So there's probably not a number one problem. It just differs with everybody, with each family.
It differs with each family. And I'll tell you what's my, you know, if I don't have children, but what would have been my number one problem of raising children would have been, you know, nothing compared in your family raising children. So I see those differences in families that I serve to say, you know, some might come in and say, you know, mine is defiant. And the other one said, well, she's very respectful. He's very respectful. He listens to me. So that wouldn't be a problem in that family. But yeah. Most of the time, I think, you know, the most common problems that, you know, the families face are probably the high use of drugs and alcohol that is out there today. And the peer pressure that is out there, the bullying that is there, you know, and self-esteem problems and, you know, lack of confidence in their children. So I go back to that communication and connection with the teenagers, which is probably one thing that I can say would be the one problem that a lot of parents would say, you know what, I also have the same problem communicating and connecting with my teenager. And that communication and connection, if I may just say, you know, a little bit about that. Lack of communication and connecting with your teenager can result in them connecting with, you know, gang members on the street or peers that will be negative peers, you know, that will influence them negatively. It also could result in the children having low self-esteem, being stressed out. Some even, you know, get into depressed, you know, situational depression because of lack of communication and, you know, connection where they don't feel they can connect to the parents or anyone who's an adult to guide them. Because remember now, this is a time where they're trying to find themselves. They're trying to establish who they are. So communication and connection and direction is key to, you know, raising the teenagers and adolescents in this day.
Yeah, I totally agree. Is there any advice that you can give parents as to how they can communicate better with their teenagers?
Yes, they can register for my programs online.
Okay. We will talk about that in just a little bit.
No. But in general, you know what? It's unfortunate, but most parents will need to get well-versed with what's going on the outside. Going to the school is no longer, you know what? I'll go to the school when I can because I'm working, because I'm doing this. Because going into the school where your child is going to school will give you an idea of what your child faces, talking to the teachers to hear what's going on in the school, talking to the counselors that are there when they have those open parent day or open day to go in and find out about your child. It means a lot for you to call in sick for that day and go into the school when all the other parents are going in. It also helps connecting with your child because then they know that you're there for them rather than going in only when there's been a call about, you know, behavior problems in the school. And then you go in. Now you're upset, you know, about what your child has done because they've taken you out of work and they're misbehaving. But you haven't been there. You know, when the days were good, when things were good, you didn't go in. And now that child is only going to associate you with coming in and, you know, when they have not done well, when there's bad behavior that has been reported. And it's been reported. So you don't have facts about it.
Right. That's excellent advice. So parents should be proactive in knowing what's going on with their children and learning more about what's going on with their children. And at school, that's the main place and the best place to learn.
And having conversation that is just beyond that. How are you doing? How was your day?
Right.
How was school? I mean, it's almost like, you know, you might as well be like the post office people, you know, you just want to support. No, I don't have any liquids, and no, I'm not caring.
So you need to really talk with your child.
That
just makes so much sense. Yes, imagine that. Yeah, talking with your child.
Yeah.
What a novel idea. Okay, well, do you think some of the problems with teenagers today, and it may be throughout all of time, but especially today, because with so much going on, do you think a lot of it is just fear and fear of some of the things that you've mentioned and the fear of growing up? Because that can be scary, especially this day and time.
Even as adults, you know, fear is a big factor in our lives. So it's even a bigger factor in children. So you can imagine, because, you know, I mean, like I mentioned before, this, you know, peer pressure. Do I say yes? Do I say no? And if I say yes to my peers, then, you know, it's against what my parents want and it's against what the adults want me to do. If I say no, then I'll be isolated in school. And what does that mean? I don't want to sit by myself. And this boy wants to have sex with me. But if I don't, then he's going to go to Mary, because Mary will give it up, you know, for anybody. So all those are things that are going on in their mind on a day-to-day basis. And it's fearful. Right. You know, so fear is a big factor. You know, what do I do? What choice do I make? And do I make this decision? And what are the consequences? And can I handle the consequences? Because you know what, whether we like it or not, even those children that are on their best behavior on a day-to-day basis, they do make mistakes. They slip sometimes and they get afraid. You know, now what? I've had a good, I was doing well for so long, and then I slipped. But that's part of life. And they need to understand that and learn that it's part of life. Even the best of the best will make mistakes. They'll slip, they'll fall, but they'll pick up and move on.
Right. And the key is picking up and moving on. And that's what they need to learn. They need to learn, because everybody, we all make mistakes.
We all do. We all do.
Do you think that teens today, I mean, talking about all that was kind of stressing me. I can only imagine how the teens feel. Do you think teenagers today are more stressed than they were when we grew up?
I think the parents are more stressed than our parents when we grew up.
I think that's true. That.
So what happens is, when the parents are more stressed than our parents when we grew up, guess what? The children are more stressed.
Right. Yeah.
Than the time that we grew up. And I think, you know, as we said before, you know, what stresses more is that the parents are parenting in separate homes.
Yeah.
There are a lot of them that are, you know, separating in separate homes. And there still has to be a shift in the parents as well, from, you know, parenting their children to parenting these young adolescents to parenting young adults. There's a certain level of parenting that you knew that, as I said, because I said so, is no longer working.
Right, right. So our parenting styles need to shift as the child grows up, which just, you know, makes perfect sense.
Yeah, a lot of professionals, you know, now tell the parents to say, you literally will learn how to be a coach and be a coach to these children, rather than a parent in the essence that, you know what, I'm the parent, so what I say goes. And if they feel that, most of them, you'll feel and see them rebelling against that. Right. Whereas if you come on as a coach and you know, allowing them sometimes to have a voice, have a say, and explain to you why they're making, you know, I always tell the parents to turn it around. This children wants to know why. That means they must be really good at explaining why themselves. Mm-hmm. So always get a why. You know, they want to do this, so tell me why. And sometimes they are making sense. And when they are, give them that credit that they're making sense and let them do what it is that they are asking you to do. Because mm-hmm. the fact of the matter is, they're asking you something, because most of them would just walk out the door and go. But if they come and ask, and your answer is always no, 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 well, why are you saying no? You never even heard the whole thing. I just started asking mom, and you just said no. And, you know, the thing about it is, take the time to listen to what it is they say, give them time, and actually stand, sit, put your phone away, and ask the teenager what it is that they want, or the child what it is they want, and hear them out. Then you can say no and explain, okay, I heard your part, but this is what I'm, you know, my part is. You can still say no. They'll still get, you know, upset. But the fact is, they understand why you say no.
What's one thing that parents can do to diffuse a stressful situation in their teen?
Breathe.
Okay.
A lot of parents do not even have time to breathe. I mean, they are just going and going and going. And
that's
even
true.
The Energizer battery, it goes dead. It goes
right.
dead. We have to charge it. We have to charge it. We have to recharge it. So for parents, my thing is I always remind parents, and I'm reminding parents now, you need to breathe. You also need to take care of yourself. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, because with everything that's going on, it's a lot on your hands. It's a lot that you have to do to parent these teenagers. But most of all, you got to take care of your health. You have to take care of your emotions. You have to take care of yourself because they feel it. And they know
right.
it. And they understand that, you know what, you are under stress. And especially if the father is not present and you and the father are not in good terms, it's the worst thing that can ever happen because the children feel it, that you are resentful because you are having to take the burden of taking care of them. And it breaks my heart when they come in and sit down and explain all this. And I'm going, oh, so you understand it, you know? And they say, I can feel it. I know she hates me. And I know she hates my father because she talks bad about my father all the time. And she does, but it's not because she hates you. She's exhausted. She's stressed. And it's too much on her plate. So, you know, the children will understand you more when you are calm and you can let, you know, yourself express your frustrations. They only need to know so much about dad. They don't need to know all the frustrations that you have on their father. They because that's not, you know, going to help them because they carry that with them to school, to bed, in everything that they do, and justify their behavior because you are upset and you told them all this stuff here. So they give themselves a reason to go out there, drink, drug, do whatever they do, because you know what? I have a reason to. Why would I? My dad doesn't care. He's, you know, he's a scumbag. He's a all those words now. These teenagers will take them out of your home.
Yeah.
And justify their behavior. So it's not, you know, it's something that parents need to be aware of.
Yeah. And there's something you said that is key to these indigo, crystal, whatever children you want, however you want to label those. And I don't really get too much into the labels, but sometimes it helps when you're trying to let people know what you're talking about. You said they feel it.
Yes.
See, that is key to knowing about these. That is key to these children. They feel everything. And so if you as a parent, if you're stressed, they feel that.
Oh, they feel it.
And they feel more than, it seems, more than my generation did. And
yes.
that, to me, is one of the main things that makes these children harder to parent. It's because they do feel everything. You know, it's not like my parents maybe could hide, you know, hide things because maybe I didn't feel everything they were going through. But these children feel everything. So if you're mad or you're upset or you're stressed or you're sick or you're whatever, they feel that. And so that makes it even more important for parents, especially the mom, because the moms are just so overworked, to take care of ourselves. We should really try and work harder to take care of ourselves so that we can keep our stress load down so that, you know, if we're more calm and have it together more and more relaxed and more positive, and then when the child comes in, the teenager comes in, it's much better for them to feel calmness coming from us as opposed to stress coming from us. Because what happens a lot of times is these children are highly stressed anyway.
Oh,
and
yeah.
As a teenager, it just makes it that much worse. But as a sensitive child, as a sensitive person, they stress easy because they don't just feel our stress and feel our things, especially some of these kids, and it varies because some are more sensitive than others, but they feel everything. So they're feeling all their friends' stress, they're feeling the teacher's stress, they're feeling the stranger's stress, and then they come home and they feel mom's stress, and you know, they can only take so much. And so it's really important that we try to keep the stress load down and that we take those breaks, we take the salt baths, we walk on the beach, we read a book, we listen to just calming music or meditation. We just have, you know, quiet time so that we can reduce our stress because, you know, it can end up being a vicious cycle, because if they're stressed and they come in, they have their own stuff and they feel everybody else's, and they come in and you have your stuff and they feel your stuff. So you're stressed and they're stressed, and then you're just stressing each other, and then you're just arguing with each other, and it's just round and round. It can really get spiral out of control. But if you do just like what you said, I think it's great. It's just breathe, just take some deep breaths. But if you can start off with just trying to keep yourself calm and keep your stress level low to start with, that will help a lot. And encourage your child to do the same thing. Be a mentor, you know, as you already are, to your child. Encourage them to go walk on the beach with you, or just walk through the woods, or walk down the street, and just relax. Just have times, and I've said this before on the show, you know, just watch a funny movie, or just something relaxing. Just anything, something you like to do, but encourage your child to do that too. And put the phones down.
Yeah. Let me also remind the parents that the children, right, they feel and see and hear everything.
They do.
Because I have a lot of parents that will go, well, I don't think my child knows that. They're listening in on the phones that, you know, phone calls that you make. They can see your frustrations right on your face in the way that you talk to them. Mm-hmm. They also can feel, as we are saying. So it's very important and key for, you know, parents to be cognizant of that. And you know what, for those parents that are in the United States of America, or, you know, in other countries where they have the health insurances, and professionals like myself, use your health insurance to go and sit down and talk to someone. Because I think friends alone, sometimes there are things that you don't say out to friends, that you'll come in my office and sit on the couch and we get to talk, and you talk about what's in your heart that is impacting or could be impacting your parenting without you even knowing it. That's probably something that you carry within your heart that you need to talk about and to resolve within yourself, so that you can start parenting from the heart.
Right. I totally agree. Well, I want to talk a little bit about how you help people in some of your programs. Now, you talked about you help teenagers with their goals, to realize what their goals are. Well, I wondered, do any of these troubled teens, when they come to see you, do they already have any goals of their own already? Or do you help them find goals, or do you help wake up their goals? I was just curious.
Most of them don't. But then, you know what, when you ask it in a separate way and say, you know, what are your plans for your future? And, you know, which the plans are goals as well. Some might even have an idea of what they want. But most of the time, what we do is we start from scratch to help them define and develop their goals of what it is that they want to do. Then we can help them break them down from, you know, waking up in the morning and going to school, participating in school, listening in school, having good grades, so that they can, you know, get an entry into the university and get a degree and then go out in the world. All those, you know, are stairways and steps that they have to take in their goal planning and be able to follow through. It gives them direction. Setting goals gives them direction. I call it the GPS of life. Because once we set up the goal, now they have a definite, you know, direction of where they're going. So now they have the GPS and they can be able to follow that, and it can help them in their choices in making decisions, because they will have goals, or, you know, that they have to stick by.
Yeah. And it seems like this is the key, or at least one of the main keys, to helping these children get back on track.
Yes.
On track.
You're right.
To living a purposeful, passion-filled life. So you help these teenagers find their purpose in life. Do you find that that's hard to do, or do they a lot of times kind of have an idea of what they want? Or do you give them questionnaires some of them just come in there just clueless? So I don't have any idea what to do, and they just take a questionnaire, or, you know, to help find out what they want to do in life?
Yeah, I'm actually a certified passion test facilitator, and I help people find their passions.
Okay.
So there are certain questions that I ask and have a discussion to help them find and define their top five passions. So, yes, I do start from scratch on trying to help them find what it is that they are passionate about and what it is that they, you know, love doing. But then we have to remember that, you know, they are teenagers, and it might change at some point, but at least they can start off off by defining at this age, at this phase, what it is that they enjoy doing so that it, you know, they can have some direction of, you know, where they're going or what their purpose is. And what does this do once they find their passions? I've noticed that, you know, a lot of them feel more confident, they feel more excited, and as a result, you know, feel more purposeful and feeling good about themselves. So it again, it makes it easier for them to get up in the morning and to listen to, okay, why is mom and dad wanting me to do this or not to do this? Why is this teacher saying this? Because they know that they're not on purpose, you know, it's not part of their plan.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, do you think that sometimes there's physical issues that can cause some of these behavior problems, or do most of the children you see just deals with basically with what, you know, with other things like we've been talking about today?
Yes and no. You know, like I said earlier on, I think, you know, I would highly recommend that, you know, parents do consult with professionals that can, you know, help them define whether, you know, the physical is playing a part or emotional is playing a part of the, you know, in their life, children's lives, and get the, you know, necessary resources that can help them deal with those.
Right, right. Because there are so many things that can cause. I don't know if anybody knows a percentage of how much is actually due to physical problems, but there's things like the diet can affect behavior. You know, they could have allergies. You know, there's vision problems. There's we actually ran across, learned about, in which I've interviewed Dr. Snyder on this program. They're called behavioral optometrists, you know, because there's a vision problem that can, which they say is actually a brain function problem that actually can affect behavior as well. So sometimes there are physical problems that can cause behavior problems, and that's always good to get that checked out by a qualified medical doctor.
Exactly.
To rule out any, you know, any other cause of it. Well, tell us about your Life Plus program.
Do you know, Kelly Murphy, one of our presenters that just, you know, passed away last month?
Yes.
She called, I met her in 2013, and we were at the Passion Test Facilitator training. So she was also a Passion Test Facilitator. When we went there, she called me Life Plus. And she said, "You're just Life Plus."
Okay.
And yeah. So, you know, because of that, and you know, it's because I'm always a happy person, positive, proactive person. I've developed a program for teenagers that, you know, is a social skills, life skills program. So the life, it stands for, the L is love who you truly are. The I is invest in your knowledge. The F is free yourself from any boundaries. E is embrace your gifts and talents. And then I have the plus as play more, laugh out loud, use your voice, and stay true to yourself.
Oh, I love that. I love that. I've got to put that in the show notes when the podcast goes up.
Yes.
So that is phenomenal. I love that.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
So, and how long is your program? I mean, do you do it online? Do you teach it live?
I'm developing it so that I can have it online. So I'll have it where we do through Vimeo, and they can see the video, and they will be able to see me, the participants, and I want to be able to see them as well. So then, but then I have live workshops here in the Orlando area that I do. Yeah, 6-hour workshops that I do on Saturdays, and they're starting on January 14th here in the Orlando area, and people can get in touch with me to enroll.
Okay.
Their children.
Well, give us your website or phone number, how people can get in touch with you to learn more about your programs and what you do.
Sure. My website is www.drstemspeaks.com. And I'm sure Bev will have it on the website, on our website, on americaoutloud.com when you listen to this podcast. You can also get in touch with me at drstem14@gmail.com, drstem14@gmail.com.
Okay. Is there any social media you'd like to let people know about?
Boy, I am on Facebook, I am on Twitter, I am on Instagram. For my teenagers out there, I'm on Snapchat. Yes, I'm on Snapchat. So LinkedIn, and all people need to do is to type in DRSTEM. I spell it as one word, Dr. Stem. And then Malatini, my last name, MAHLATINI.
Okay, and your website again is drstemspeaks.com.
Yes, because I'm a motivational speaker. So for those of you that are looking for speakers, keynote speakers for your conferences, for the schools, I'm available to speak as well. So it's drstamspeaks.com.
Okay, very good. Now, do you help schools? I mean, I know you work some with schools, but do you work with like the principals and teachers at school to help at these, some of these schools to help them learn how to work with these children?
Yes, I do. I'm a consultant as well. So my company is called Global Coaching and Consulting Services. So I do work with principals, teachers, counselors that are in the school system to help them coordinate programs, you know, for children that might have, you know, at risk. We call them at risk children.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yes.
Now, do you go to these schools and work with them, or do you just work with them over the phone or through a program you send them?
I go to the schools, consult with them in the schools. I also consult with them on the phone.
Okay.
Yeah, some via email. They might email me and ask for, you know, a consult through email, and we can work that out, or Skype.
Okay.
But I want to encourage the parents that are out there not to give up, because what happens is I live with my mother here today, and I'm 52 years old, and to hear her talk about how I was as a teenager and who I am today working with teenagers day and night. But she's so proud now, and she tells me that she could never have seen me being and doing what I'm doing now. So I hope that you can hang on in there and know that you too will be proud of who your teenager turns out to be.
Right. And I think that's a really good note to leave on. There's always hope. There's always hope. As long as there's life, there's hope.
Yes.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stem, for this very interesting interview. And be sure and check out her new show, The Dr. Stem Show. And you can also go to her website to learn more about her or get her to help with consulting at your school or with you as a parent and your teenager, drstemspeaks.com. And again, her show on America Out Loud is The Dr. Stem Show. You'll want to be sure and listen to that. Thank you for listening. This is Beverly Butler, and you've been listening to the Misdiagnosed Life podcast and talk radio show on the America Out Loud Network.